And that means we're to the last chapter now, right? Oh, no. No. Yeah, it is the last one? Okay. All right, I agree with that then. This last chapter is called, I think, the chromosomal basis of inheritance. So once again, it's still about DNA, but it's about DNA at the chromosome level. In the opening slide, we're revisiting this dihybrid cross that we already talked about in the previous slide. I mean, in the previous chapter. Remember, it's dihybrid if there are two different characteristics being tracked at the same time. You ignore all the others. And if the two parents that are crossed originally differ in their traits for each of the two characteristics. So this is exactly the same example. Yellow round seed, upper Y, upper R. Green wrinkled, which is a double recessive. Lower Y, lower R. We've already went through that in terms of genotype. But when we've been talking about all of these crosses, whether they were monohybrid or dihybrid, we've really been only paying attention to that actual gene, right? Or genes in the case of dihybrid. We were ignoring the fact that those genes really do not occur in isolation, right? When you think about what assorts, like we've been talking about for independent assortment, it's not genes that assort, right? What is it that assort? Chromosomes. Genes are like passengers on a large boat, where the large boat is the chromosome, right? And so there are different chromosomes, different boats. They independently assort, but each boat has a hell of a lot of gene passengers. And therefore, however that boat assorts, all the genes that are members of that boat, all the genes on that chromosome are going to go in the same place, right? That's what I mean by saying that they don't operate in isolation, even though we were thinking about them in isolation. And that's why in this one, the part we didn't see in the previous slides, is that the chromosomes are shown. And now, not all of the chromosomes of the cell are shown here, because we don't care about any of the other characteristics governed by the genes on any of the other chromosomes. So it's not to say that this cell has only two chromosome types. It's just that these two characteristics that we're talking about, which correspond, remember, individually to two different genes, characteristics correspond to genes, well, those have loci, right? What is a locus? Not a locust. A locus.
Position of a chromosome at which a gene is found.
Yeah, it's the position that a gene occupies on whatever chromosome it's a member of. Right? And so remember, the genotypes, each individual letter in a genotype represents an allele. Well, look at the labeling of the chromosomes here. You have two chromosomes. Hopefully you recognize that this is two chromosome types, even though there are four chromosomes. There's four overall chromosomes because there's two of each type, right? There's two types here, though, not because N equals 2, like I was saying before. N could be whatever number. There's only two types shown here because those are the only ones that we care about in this dihybrid cross. So there's the chromosome type, whatever number it is, that carries the gene for seed color, that's the yellow gene, the Y gene, and there's the chromosome that has the locus for the gene coding for seed texture, the R gene. Okay, now notice that they are on the same, I mean, they are on different chromosomes, right? Along with the Y gene, there are thousands of other genes, we just don't care about them. And along with the R gene on the other chromosome, there are thousands of other genes as well. We just don't care about those. So the little black dot, that represents the locus, the actual position that the gene of interest occupies. Okay, well, all of this should make sense to you based on everything we've said in the last two chapters. for these two diploid adults. But when those adults get to the point of making gametes in preparation for their cross, the male making the sperm, the female making the eggs, that involves meiosis, right? And meiosis is randomly going to choose one or the other. Well, strictly speaking, both of them are going to be chosen, right? But one of them is going to go to one gamete, the other one's going to go to the other gamete. So for any given fertilization event, only one gamete is used. Well, remember, there's four overall gametes that are made, but any given gamete is going to contain one allele or the other that were originally there in that parent. So that's why the gametes are shown with two chromosomes, but only one of each of those two types. So these are haploids, as you'd expect gametes to be. And as we've been saying it for other chapters, the doubly true breeding or doubly homozygous parent can only make one kind of gamete because both alleles for each of the two characteristics are dominant. So it's upper R, upper Y only kind, and the other one can make only a lower Y, lower R. That means getting those two together results in only one possible type of zygote, right? But now you see the chromosomes involved. So every one of the F1s, however many are produced, will be doubly heterozygous, upper Y, upper R, lower R, which means each of them will have a chromosome with a dominant R, a chromosome with a recessive R, and similarly for the Ys, just as pictured here. And because of dominance, once again, for both of these two characteristics, the yellowness comes out and the smoothness comes out, so 100% of the F1s are dominant in both of the two characteristics. Okay, now let's get to the boxes, which is the new stuff, the truly new stuff in this. Notice that the boxes to either side of that are labeled as law of segregation, law of independent assortment. These are two of Mendel's laws, even though he didn't know what chromosomes were. He came up with the law of segregation, law of independent assortment. And they really describe things we've already talked about, even though I haven't given you these as laws yet. As you see, the law of segregation, which means to separate, right? To segregate means to separate into different piles or whatever. The two alleles for each gene separate during gamete formation. Well, that is true, but it's not true that the alleles are doing this by themselves, right? What really are segregating? Not the alleles, but what? No. This is within... Well, the gametes are separate cells, eventually. But before those two cells are formed, what is it that segregate? Well, I mean physical things. The alleles do segregate, but not as their own entities. Why is it that the alleles segregate? Because what actually segregates? What did I say alleles are like in the analogy I used earlier? After that. Starting this chapter, I used an analogy. Passengers on a ship. Yeah. So it's not the passengers individually that are segregating, right? It's the ships, the chromosomes, right? So, yes, it is true that alleles for each gene segregate, but that's simply because the chromosome that one allele is riding on is going to go one way. It's going to segregate from the other chromosome, which is carrying the other allele. Okay? So this law of segregation really just explains what you already have learned happens in what part of the process. When does that law of segregation actually happen? No, that's not segregation. That's the opposite of segregation, right?
Metaphase?
No. Anaphase. That's anaphase is always when things separate, right? So the law of segregation, which is the separation of the two homologs from each other, and therefore the separation of the alleles that they're carrying, that happens in anaphase, but specifically which anaphase? Anaphase 1, yes. That's when two homologs separate from each other. Okay, law of independent assortment. Obviously that has to do with independent assortment, right? Alleles of genes on non-homologous chromosomes assort independently during gamete formation. Non-homologous means that if you have a gene on one tetrad and a gene on a different tetrad, they're going to be doing different things, right? They're not necessarily going to be shipped together. But if you have two genes that are on the same chromosome, then they are going to go together as a package, right? They're on the same ship. This is saying if they're on non-homologous chromosomes, which this picture is showing, the Y gene is on a different chromosome type compared to the R gene. So they might go to the same cell, but that's just random chance, right? Depends on where their two boats go. They can go the same place or different places. But anyway, the law of independent assortment also refers to something that really happens in the process. And when does that happen?
Metaphase
1 of meiosis, exactly. Because that's when they line up, right? That lining up is the assortment. And how they line up, facing which of the two poles, is the coin flip that really takes place. Okay, so when you go through with this whole thing, you can see at the chromosome level what's happening, and they're on different boats, so they are independently assorting, which means that there's all four different kinds of gametes that are producible. You see these on these brackets down here? Because the two blues can go together, the two reds together, or red and blue, or blue and red. Those are four different kinds of gametes, right, for each parent. And therefore, that's why you'd expect all of the possible combinations of traits, as we've already talked about. You have the two parental types, which are yellow and smooth and green and wrinkled. And you also have these two, which are called what? If they're not parental, because they're not like either parent, in this case it's either yellow, wrinkled, or green, smooth. What are those called, classified as? No? I mean, they are, yes, but a specific word I gave you earlier today. If they're non-parentals, they are recombinants. So that's what we mean by recombination. Taking one allele from one parent and an allele from another parent, putting them into the same individual. Okay? And once again, you have the familiar 9:3:3:1 ratio, which is typical for a Mendelian case of a dihybrid cross. If it were monohybrid, what would the ratio be? 3:1, right. 3 dominant to 1 recessive. But this is two different genes that were two characteristics at the same time we care about. So 9:3:3:1. All right, that's it.